Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski. An over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The Bucks are undefeated, still. The undefeated season in play, of course, just like last week, we're recording on a Monday, so all of this could have changed by the time you're hearing this on Tuesday morning. I don't know. Who knows? But I'm J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show, and on the other line, I've got not only Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, but also Lori Nickel, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Lori, have you been on our podcast before? I'm trying to remember.
Not this one, no.
Not this Mm-mm. one. But you have been on a Journal Sentinel podcast before, right?
One in my whole life, but we talked Brewers.
Oh, very good. That must have been, that. Wow, was that back in 2018 when they were in the NLCS? I think that's a while ago. We are hoping to make Lori a more regular part of the Point Forward podcast experience. She knows the Bucks as well as anybody, and the Bucks are, you know, just humming along, undefeated, the best start in franchise history. It went up to 9-0 without Giannis Antetokounmpo against the Oklahoma City Thunder on Saturday night. They are in Atlanta. They're finally going to get some road games under their belt with Atlanta, Oklahoma City, Atlanta again, San Antonio. I don't even remember. One of those is a home game, but the Bucks are hopefully going to get a little bit more of a test than they have to this point. Lori, I'm actually going to start with you just because we haven't had you on. Your overall impressions of this team, your thoughts about the fast start, if it's real or not. A lot of home games, so it's a little weird to say. But what are you thinking as you're watching the Milwaukee Bucks 2022-23 edition?
Well, thanks. First of all, thank you for letting me crash your party. I pretty much invited myself on, and I was like, I really want to do this. So, and you guys were like, sure. So thank you.
It was not said like that. I protest. I said sure with an exclamation point. I want that clear for the record.
So I just want to apologize to anybody who is suffering through this and has insomnia. I mean, no, really, I'm just going to try to practice and see if I can contribute anything here. And if not, I will gracefully leave sometime in the middle of the season. So anyway, but I want to try this. I love podcasts. It's something that I don't do. So that's why I totally crashed in on these guys. I have a unique perspective. I've been really busy with football. So this is the first basketball game that I've seen in person Saturday night against Oklahoma City at Fiserv. And my first thought was, where's the defense? Like, they're not playing the Bucks at all. I'm like, I haven't seen, you know, crashing bodies. I mean, going from the Celtics in the playoffs back in May to whatever the heck that was Saturday night. So that's really interesting to me, a real stark contrast that we are just not going to see great defensive basketball pretty much from too many people in November. And that makes sense. Another thing that I was shocked when I checked the box score, despite Milwaukee's dominance on Saturday night, Jim, as you and I watched, they still shot collectively 42.2%. I'm like, they are the best ugly shooting team I've ever seen, because I never noticed it, didn't pay attention. I know that's been a common theme throughout the season, and it just doesn't matter because they're deep and they're talented. So those are my first two impressions. They're starting to remind me a little bit of the 2018-2019 season, where they rolled over people. They didn't have too many scoring droughts back then. And so I'm curious to see where this goes as well. It feels nice to see a normal season with a normal off season and all that. Things feel good. So it was great to be back. I love covering football, but basketball is where my heart is. And so it's been really fun to be back.
Yeah. Lori, you mentioned the Bucks shooting. They actually, it's probably that 42% is probably one of their better nights of the year thus far. They just haven't made a ton of shots, and yet, you know, they are the best defensive team in the league. You know, that was their fourth time holding a team to under 100 points, which I think the league as a whole is averaging well over 115 per game and a very high. So I think there's seven players averaging 30 points per game or more, which I think only one or two guys, you know, end a season like that. So, it's a very interesting start, a 9-0 start in just like relatively bad offense, tremendous defense, 9-0, and yet they've only got a one-game lead in the East. You know, as Cleveland has started 8-1, so it's been a really unique kind of start to the year. And you're right, JR. I mean, franchise record. And the last team to start like this was the 14-15 Warriors, who went 24-0. So it's been a heck of a start for sure.
Bucks, of course, will be going 24-0, and that will be a very nice homage to the team that fell to the Bucks 24-1. Those famous T-shirts that were distributed through the crowd a few years ago. That Warriors team went on to lose only 9 games. We talked at length about how this team, this Bucks team, was not going to shoot for any sort of regular season stardom, and that they could very well start off the season just like they did last year, where they went 6-9 to get things going before everything had settled in. Here is a team that doesn't have Chris Middleton, its second best player, as well as Pat Connaughton, and Joe Ingles isn't going to be due back until January, and they absolutely didn't do anything we thought they were going to do. They have started out 9-0, and you mentioned though that 3-point shooting, right? It was really good in Minnesota. They got on the road and they finally started hitting just a ton of threes. But for me, what Laurie said, that first the start against Oklahoma City was so ugly without Giannis, the first game of the year without Giannis. And then Grayson Allen hits 5 threes. Javon Carter hits 5 threes. Somebody else, I think, had 4 threes. It wasn't George Hill. I forget who was. But
Brooke, I think.
Brooke, yeah. Okay, so they figured stuff out. I guess I'm curious. You know that if the Bucks lose Giannis – they're in the postseason, their championship hopes are probably sunk, but there are going to be points of the year where they want Giannis to get some rest and they need to win without him. And then they found a way to win without him. And I don't know if the opponent makes it less, less of an accomplishment in your mind, Jim and Laurie, but that's a pretty good thing. I mean, they pulled away. They won that game convincingly. There have not been many like tight nail biters along the way here since they opened the year winning that close game in Philadelphia. So, Jim, I guess I'll start with you. Seeing them against Oklahoma City without Giannis perform like that, it heartening to you, or is it really just kind of a one-off because sort of a random game against a Western Conference opponent that isn't going to be at the top of the standings?
No, you can take something from it in that you have to replace 32 points per game that Giannis is averaging, right? So that needs to be made up. And how do you make up for that? Well, they start with Brook Lopez. He makes some threes, and then they end with Brook Lopez as Brooklyn Brook, the guy in the paint. The fact that Javon Carter and Wesley Matthews and George Hill, little more aggressive offensively because they had to be, they couldn't just sort of float around the perimeter, right? Those guys had to participate on offense to a greater degree. That's always going to be a good thing, I think, to just give guys a little more freedom. But I again, it sort of starts defensively. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander came in averaging 33 points a game, 7 assists. He had 1 assist at halftime, I think 19 points. That's no small thing either. So to do that without, Josh Giddey's a good young player. To do that without your one of your big interior guys defensively, I think that there's a positive there. You're right. Giannis is going to miss. I mean, he hasn't played 70 games in years, so he's going to miss 15 games. Let's just call it. So they don't want to go 0-15 or 1-13. So no, it was a good start to them figuring out what to do without their better players.
Laurie, what did you think of Marjon Beauchamp? We got the starter version of Marjon Beauchamp in this game, but also, I mean, he shot 1 of 9. Like, I think everyone understands, acknowledges that he is a work in progress. He's a rookie, obviously, but it's kind of exciting to see him get some early run. I kind of Dante, rookie Dante, got a similar volume of minutes. So what are your impressions of what that guy can bring to the table?
Yeah, I disagree with Jim a little bit on that, but on the previous topic, but I really wanted to see Marjan for sure. He looks so smooth. I was trying to compare seeing Johnny Davis from the Wisconsin Badgers in March Madness. I was trying to see, is this guy ready for the NBA? And I had some question marks about that. But different stage, different caliber of competition, that sort of thing. With Marjan, you can really see that he's a pro. I mean, and yes, reality is going to hit him before the All-Star break. The guy's going to hit a wall and all that. But he looks so smooth out there. I think even Drew Holiday said something to that effect. He looks like a really solid overall player. I wasn't surprised that he kind of hit a shooting slump, you know, being in the starter role and all that. And it doesn't look like he had to play too much either. So, oh, 24 minutes. Yeah, I like him. I can't wait to learn more about him. I hope to interview him soon for a story. And the teammates already embrace him and like him. That's huge, too, because this is a really veteran and experienced team. And I think, I mean, Jim or JR, is, this was 7 of 9 home games, right, for the Bucks? Yeah, I don't, a 9-0 start, not that it doesn't, it's always impressive. With, we're talking about Milwaukee, okay? We're always going to be grateful for something like that. But they had to have a good record like that. You don't know anything about this team yet until they go on the road. Like in the NFL, if you say you don't know anything about your team until the first 4 games of the season, for me, you don't know anything about an NBA team until December. So I'm, skeptical isn't the right word, but I certainly don't feel comfortable that I know anything about this team other than what we already know about the established guys, you know. But Marjan, how he fits into this could be really exciting. I mean, we saw some of that when, like, Dante DiVincenzo joined the team and there was some energy and some good moments of good defense and things like that, some spark, and that was good. But then you also saw some mistakes that you kind of expect from a younger guy. Well, I want to know what Beauchamp can do with these veterans, because there's a standard there with Chris Middleton and Giannis and Drew now, like, right, the standard's pretty high. So he's going to have to earn those minutes. So the more playing time he can get early, the better.
Well, Jim, I'm curious to know how you disagree with her on Marjan. I got to hear what's going on. What conversations you guys are having behind
that. I meant I disagreed with the previous thing.
Oh, right. You said well, expound on that then. Which part?
Yeah, I just don't, you know, they should be winning here at home, right? They haven't left at all. They should have a good record here at home. That doesn't, being the only undefeated team in the NBA isn't, it, again, it's always impressive, but it still doesn't tell us enough about the team yet.
Yeah, I mean, with that, I definitely agree. Because honestly, the schedule makers didn't really do them any favors. Because I think we all know they're a playoff team, whether they start 9-0 or 3-6, we would believe the Milwaukee Bucks are a playoff team. So I don't know if we've really learned anything. They just haven't had, you know, they just haven't had that matchup yet. They haven't had not even just the fact that it's at home, but it's against teams that they should be beating, and they are.
Yeah, well, you look, there's a baseball element to some of this, like meaning, you know, beat the garbage teams, beat the teams you're supposed to. And look, they played Brooklyn before Brooklyn totally imploded again. Philadelphia, I don't think, no one knew Joel Embiid was hurt like that until days after that game. And Doc Rivers says, oh, by the way, right? And then Atlanta, the first time around, and maybe even this time around as we record this, is still trying to figure things out with DeJounte Murray and Trae Young and who does what and when. So, yes, the Bucks, the continuity is king, is playing out, right? The good teams they've played so far, or what you think would be good teams, are still sort of, you know, figuring things out. Yeah, Oklahoma City's not a good team. They had won 4 straight. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a real dude, and I do think there is something to be said for the Bucks winning a game like that. Yes, it's at home, but again, you're missing your 2 best players and 3 of your top 7. Should they still beat Oklahoma City? Sure, but it's still like that. Most NBA teams lose when 3 of their best 7 players don't play the game. So I think there's something to be added, but you're right. I mean, look, will they win in Atlanta tonight as we record this? I don't know, but they should beat San Antonio. They should be. Yeah. If you're 11-1 coming home again after this, what does that mean? That means you're essentially having to play slightly better than 500 ball the rest of the way to win 55 games. And 53 was the 1 seed last year. So that's what's important about the start. Whether or not we know they'll win a title, yes, Lori's right. We'll know that better later. but it's definitely setting them up for the way they're going to want to be later in the year, where JR last year, right? It was like, what are they going to be, the four, the five? What are they got? You know, they're being set up for something good here just by nature of taking advantage of the schedule, being at home, et cetera.
Can I just interject too? The one thing we do know about these Bucks is they're back to their boring ways. They remember the criticism from fans. Yeah. God, I love them. They're so boring. Well, you know what? I am so glad I do not cover the Nets right now or the Celtics. I mean, coaching firings and the disaster. So Milwaukee has that team chemistry back too. That seems, now that we actually get to go back in the locker room and sort of talk to guys again, I can see some of that chemistry coming back. So, and maybe it was always there, but again, we were at arm's length so much of the time. But wow, compared to the drama going around the rest of the league, it's kind of nice actually to see them just focus on themselves, you know, that, so that, that could be a trademark for this team, a Mike Budenholzer, Giannis type of team that they can play around on their social media. But we don't have to worry about a coach drawing some weird technicals in the game and then getting canned later and all that stuff. We don't have to worry about crazy press conferences and combative confrontations between media and players. It's just, it is boring in Milwaukee.
Yeah. Well, heck, they just left Minnesota, and Anthony Edwards is now viral for all the wrong reasons, for standing out of, you know, with his hands on his hips as this whole play is run. And we didn't talk about what's going on in Los Angeles with both of those teams. So, yeah, it's continuity. They banked on it as continuity being the thing, and they're taking advantage of it.
Very low on the Nets' order of issues that they're dealing with is the fact that they let Javon Carter go for nothing. Last year, and the Bucks picked him up, he just didn't have a spot on the roster, and the Bucks have kind of gotten a lot out of him. This is now 9 games in a row he started them all. He's playing 24 minutes a game. He's not, the numbers actually aren't even that spectacular. In fact, I'd say they're kind of bad, percentages-wise, and, you know, certainly after last year where he was probably playing well above his station when he in the limited amount of time with the Bucks offensively. He's obviously here for his defense, and his minutes are going to disappear when these guys are healthy and come back. But man, he's pretty great. He's pretty solid. And I don't know if this guy is a rotation player by the time you get to the postseason, but I'm starting to think maybe he does have to be on the floor at points in time when we get to the postseason. So Javon Carter, dude or not a dude, I guess is what I'm going for here, Jim. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to go. You're right. I mean, is he going to start over Grayson Allen when Chris Middleton comes back and they kind of move off that three guard thing? I think so. I think having, you know, Chris is back, so there's your offense. And then your Grayson kind of comes off the bench as that guy to hit 4 to 6 threes and whatever. I think Bud, as we all know, loves defense. And if you have Javon Carter and Drew Holiday up top, especially this emphasis this year and on defending and better contesting three-pointers, I mean, it's working so far in large part because it's Drew Holiday and Javon Carter starting it up top. So, yeah, I think that's a real thing. And also, assuming Pat Connaughton, Chris Middleton come back, and Wes Matthews and George Hill and Javon Carter are healthy, that shrinks their minutes, but that also means you can sort of rotate those guys defensively and keep the 2 36-year-olds a little fresher. Will Javon Carter start 82 games? I don't know, but I think he's definitely going to be playing more. I think he's earned that. And the offense, I think, it'll be that sort of, can you give him 6 to, then he hits 5 threes one night. You know what I mean? Like, when Middleton comes back, he's not going to be asked to maybe do what he's trying to do right now.
I have a question for you guys. What I want to know what you think about this, and I really want to watch Mike Budenholzer. How deep is he going to go into this rotation when it gets to be after the All-Star break? You know, it makes a lot of sense to me to play a lot of people now just because you know you need that for the marathon and you need you know, you need to keep your regular guys, your veterans healthy, and then you need to give your young guys minutes. They need to develop their draft picks and all that kind of stuff. But Budenholzer's done two very different approaches. You know, 3 or 4 years ago, he was 10 deep, and that offense was amazing to watch. And those were like the Kyle Korver years. But, you know, then when they won the championship, or even last year, didn't they, Jim, basically go two or three deep, like what you expect from traditional NBA playoff basketball? So with this group and some of the uniqueness of having a couple of older guys who, Brook Lopez, by the way, looks incredible. He looks so much better even than the end of last season when he came back with that back stuff. What does Budenholzer do? And I always want to manage Giannis's minutes, because Giannis at peak form and 100% output is unstoppable. So I don't know how, I would love to hear what you guys think. And that's one of the things that I go into this season with a question mark is, how deep is he going to go into that rotation and be consistent with it?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think he's started off about 10 deep right now, but I think it's out of necessity. Chris Middleton is going to play 30 plus minutes, right? And Pat's going to play 24. I think one of the reasons I'd argue, maybe Bucks fans would argue, one of the reasons they won the championship, one of the reasons they probably could have, should have beat Boston even without Chris Middleton, is the best players played the most minutes when it mattered. He stopped doing that thing where Giannis and Chris didn't play, you know, 38 to 40 minutes in a game. So I don't see how you go all the way back from that. I don't see Mike going 11 deep when Joe Ingles is available. Like, that guy's going to have to get his legs in. He's going to have to learn how to play. Yes, he's a veteran. We have an idea that he knows how to play a two-man game with Giannis, but he's going to have to play and figure that out. There's a chemistry there that has to be developed. So I think, Lori, yes, until February, you're right. It is the All-Star break. And then who knows? Maybe at that point, George Hill, Serge Ibaka, Jordan Ward are all traded for some other dude. But I think now, until the break, I think you're right. It's maybe a deeper rotation. And then depending on the trade deadline and Joe Ingles, that's when you see it shrink a little bit. Because I don't see how you go away from the thing that won you a championship to the thing that didn't. You know what I mean? I think that's, to me, that's what, if there's an adjustment, that's maybe what it is given Chris, Joe, Drew, Giannis, Brooke, Wes, like you're 9, 8, 9, that time together post-break. But until then, you know, why push it?
I'm just fascinated to know what this team looks like when Joe Ingles is at full strength playing, and Middleton and Connaughton are presumably back as well. I just don't have a feel for what that looks like and how that's going to, you know, the Buck, it seems like the Bucks would be kind of unstoppable if everybody's doing what they're doing now. But I don't know. And somebody I do think is going to be odd man out. It'll probably be like Javon Carter or Wesley Matthews is just not going to have hardly any minutes to speak of, and it won't be weird, but I don't think it'll be, you know, if Serge Ibaka is only getting a few minutes a game, certainly Jordan Ward getting only a few minutes a game, I don't think anybody's going to blink about that. I inevitably there might be, and this will dovetail into talking about what we know updates injury wise with both Pat and Chris. It kind of felt like maybe status quo this week, that we're not moving too rapidly towards seeing those guys return more so than we had previously. You know, it sounds like Chris Middleton maybe could still come back in a week or two, but I don't know. It sounds just that they're taking their time, understandably. But inevitably, I feel like we're going to hear, oh, they brought those guys back, and then they lost their chemistry for a second because they weren't able to go 9-0 as soon as those guys came back. And you know, we know they'll be playing in limited capacity to start with. But what do we know about the injury situation? And I guess, you know, when the time comes that these guys are back, I guess, is there any chance it disrupts a little bit what they have going on at this point?
So Pat Connaughton is on this trip. Now, when I talked to Pat in Minnesota, it was the first time he talked since the injury, and he said what they want, maybe the medical staff, is when he does his basketball stuff, the right calf feels like the left, which means he feels nothing. He's like, that's not the case yet. he's on the trip, and I think that's meant so he can maybe do some pregame stuff or some shoot around stuff and okay, see how it recovers and whatever. Budenholzer said maybe he's going to have to get a 5-on-5 run in with the herd, but he's not quite sure. So maybe Pat plays in San Antonio at the end of this trip, maybe. Middleton's more interesting. So he had that practice, seemed like a big step forward. And then when we asked Bud about, hey, is Chris on the trip? He just said, well, there's no updates on Chris. So I don't know what that means. And obviously this team is very opaque with injuries regardless. Now, to your point, though, JR, I don't think there's any disruption because of who they are. You're talking about Chris Middleton, Pat Connaughton, five, you know, guys who have now played, this will be their fifth seasons together with everybody else. So, no, I think they are who they are, and they all know their games well enough that, no, they're going to lose games, of course, when they come back, but it won't be because, you know, because they came back. It's just, I don't think there's going to be really any hiccups in chemistry or any of that. It will just be, no, okay, they need to actually like work themselves back into NBA game shape, if anything.
All right, so before we move into our special feature of the week, what any thoughts, Lori? I think I might have cut you off there.
No, that's okay. I think there will be a little bit of a disruption and a change in rhythm and all that kind of stuff. It's impossible, as close as it is in basketball and 5-on-5, to bring back people and then not have that change, passing or nonverbal communication. But I think of last year in March of 2022, when Brooke Lopez came back, Bobby Portis lost a lot of his minutes. And initially there was a scoring dip from Portis, but because the chemistry is so good, particularly between Bobby Portis and Brooke Lopez, and because they seem to both like Budenholzer. Remember, Portis said to Budenholzer, I got you, coach. Like, he understood the assignment, basically. And Portis was so grateful to finally play out the minutes that he wanted to play to see what he was capable of fully with the Bucks. So he had to make that shift, though, coming off the bench, playing stilted minutes, coming in on weird rotations, having like kind of an unpredictable schedule. You could be 13 minutes one night and 26 the next. That is very challenging for basketball players, rhythm basketball players who like certain amount of minutes or whatever. So I think that's always a challenge. And I think that will be something that this team will have to adjust to, because the people who are coming back are major contributors and great players with great resumes. So I think that has to have some wiggle room, margin for error. People need to work together again, kind of a thing. So, but I think, again, because I'm so impressed with this team chemistry and all the continuity that Jim referenced, I think it'll be okay. But yes, I would expect some challenging points. That's all.
You know, Bobby Portis quietly is playing fewer minutes this year than he did overall last year. He's averaging a double-double, 13 and 11. And I just think, once that guy starts hitting his threes again, we haven't seen that from him yet this year. Holy smokes, that's going to be another element that they can add right in if he does, in fact, catch fire shooting the ball a little bit more. All right, we have a one weekly feature every week. This one's going to be pretty easy. It is an election season after all, so it is a good chance to discuss the candidates. We're going to talk about MVP watch today.
You was last season's most valuable player, or as it's called, the MP3. What was that like?
No, I was the MVP.
MP3.
No, I wasn't.
You was the MP3.
No, I wasn't.
All right, MVP watch is pretty simple. Is Giannis Antetokounmpo the MVP of the 2022-23 basketball season after 10 games? And how can the answer be anything but absolutely? Jim, tell us all about it.
I do love this. It's never too early. I mean, look, we're almost, 10% into the season thereabouts. I mean, he's in the – look, here's the funny thing. They're 9-0. He's averaging career highs in points. Kind of flirting with career highs and rebounds and assists and all that stuff. But Cleveland's 8-1. I mean, Donovan Mitchell, you know, Jason Tatum's in that conversation. So if I'm a voter, actually, I don't even know if I have a vote this year, to be honest. Like Donovan Mitchell's in the conversation. Like it's like a Giannis Donovan Mitchell thing. I know Bucks fans are going to be like, what are you talking about? But Donovan Mitchell, 31 points a game, 6.5 assists. He's shooting the ball a little bit better than Giannis. That's the crazy thing, is Giannis isn't making his free throws. He's not making any threes. His field goal percentage is not what he's used to. So to your point about Bobby Portis, like if he actually starts making his shots and free throws, all of this could be very scary for opponents going forward. But I would say it's a Giannis Donovan Mitchell thing. Not to discount Luka Doncic. I mean, the start to his season has been incredible. But, you know, I'll go with 9-0, 8-1 over 5-3. We'll put it that way.
I've pulled up the Basketball Reference MVP tracker, which granted, yes, this is all ridiculous because it's 8 or 9 games, but Giannis's probability of winning the MVP is 68%. Luka is actually next on the list with most of what's left, 22.3%. Luka's got scoring 36 points a game. 36 points a game. I know that's 8 games. That's nonsense. And, you know, Giannis, like you said, is not hitting his three-pointers or his free throws necessarily. Still shooting 55%. Like, that's still obviously very good. He's a 7-footer around the basket. That's going to happen. They do have Spider. Donovan Mitchell, third on this list with 5%. And I do think you're right, though. I think Donovan Mitchell, I mean, it's hard to ignore what he's done so far. And if that continues, you know, Cleveland, there's that matchup coming up November 16th at Pfizer Forum against the Cavaliers. It is absolutely theoretically possible the Bucks are still undefeated at that point, and that would be a marquee showdown between the two Midwest markets, baby, the small markets rising up in revolution in the Eastern Conference. That could be a really good game. Donovan Mitchell, very, very special player, like you said. Lori, what do you think? I know you probably think it's crazy that we're talking MVP, but I love
it. You know I hate you right now. I love you, but I hate you. I am not putting up my Christmas decorations until after Thanksgiving, and you're not making me talk about this BS. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, if I pick Luka, will someone tell Giannis to motivate him to get going? I'm just kidding. Luka has 8.6 assists and 8.8 rebounds, shooting almost 53%. You know, I'm not a fan of anything anymore. I've never been, you know, I really take the reporter thing seriously, but I just enjoy watching him play, and I enjoy listening to the Bucks talk about his highlights and stuff as they do on the side. But this conversation is absolutely ridiculous. And it points to the fact that things are so boring here in Milwaukee that we get to talk about, are we going to be rich or really rich compared to some of the others? So these are first world problems, and I think Milwaukee fans should enjoy it as long as they can, because I'll tell you, I'm writing a Packers column right now, and it's a very different vibe.
That is true. Oh, yeah, I agree with you. This is nonsense, but it's fun nonsense. Yes, you win the Powerball. Rich or really, really rich. By the way, Drew Holiday, number 4 on the MVP tracker. And Bobby Portis, number 7. They only list 10 names. A couple Phoenix guys at the bottom there. Tatum is on the list at 6th, but there you go. MVP, early MVP conversation. It's looking good. It's looking good for Giannis and Luka. Luka's got something that Giannis doesn't have, and that is it's impossible to quantify, but the fact that Giannis already has 2 of these, like, I don't know if people are, there is an exhaustion that sort of endures, unless you're maybe LeBron James when it comes to MVP voting. Nikola Jokic has 2 of them. I could see voters maybe trying to go into a new direction. Like you said, the Bucks, they just dominate everybody. Maybe go for the flashier sort of single-handed, you know, the what Luka is able to do. I saw a headline, Giannis is putting the Bucks on his back, and while that's technically true, I don't know if that is true. He's got a lot of guys around him, and okay. And that was borne out in this last game when Giannis didn't play and they still won fairly handily. How about Brook Lopez, comeback player of the year? What do you guys think of that? Did he play too much last year?
No, he only played 13 regular season games, right? 12?
That's a good. First of all, back to your voting thing. I'm a Heisman voter. You should never vote based on, oh, I'm tired of voting for this guy. You should always, like, when I vote for somebody, I take it so seriously. I lose sleep over it. And it's kind of like, okay, if you're the world's general manager and you're going to take the best player, the answer should always be pure and honest. It shouldn't have this. I know exactly what you mean. Some reporters have admitted to that dialogue of, oh, well, I'm kind of sick, give someone else a chance. No. But Lopez, wow. I just, my thing, like I watching Randall Cobb sit on the sideline with the Packers, it's not the question of how great you are or how good the comeback is now in November. For Brooke and that poor back and all that work that he does, I mean, he's laying down on airplanes, you guys. He's just taking care of those discs. To me, it's so amazing, and it needs to go through the test of a couple of months, and I hope it's okay for him because back injuries are, like, devastating. So it's too soon, isn't it? Don't you think?
Well, it's never. It's the NBA, Lori. I mean, they're already talking about who's leaving for when. Giannis's contract's up in 2 years. Come on. He's going to team up with – no, I like it. We'll see. Damian Lillard is probably in that conversation, JR, because he'll – and Damian's a much bigger name. And that's kind of the problem with some of this stuff, to Lori's point. Like, I've only voted – I only had 1 year as a voter for the NBA award. And you're right. Like, it's the PFW
rate. How do you get a vote? How does that work?
I believe Eric Name from The Athletic had the vote last year. I think because there's only two of us, it may rotate. I don't know how this happens. I just got it the championship year. And then Eric had it last year. So I'm sort of assuming it's my turn again, but I don't know. In the NFL, it is an Associated Press award. And I believe... Even though there's no, I don't think Steve McGargy from the AP has it. I think Spoon votes are Tom Silverstein. So I don't know. But to Lori's point, to Jared, like I feel like the voter fatigue thing comes from, I mean, I know we're three talking heads right now, and maybe we'll appear on YouTube shortly and you will see our talking heads. But I feel like it's like a talking head thing. Like it's a radio TV personality who just decides, I don't know, we're done with this, you know, because I don't know any writers, Lori, who like are like, no, I'm not going to vote for the best player or whom I feel is MVP because they've won it before.
Right.
I tend to hear that more from like the people with like who are paid to have microphones, like not that we're not, but you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And I'm not going to say any more. But yes, I do.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's probably more of an unimagined narrative because, you know, people imagine themselves as thinking that way than it is actually how voters operate. One last one, Bobby Portis, sixth man of the year, maybe. He's the only guy on this list who this MVP tracker who is coming off the bench primarily. Guys like Tyler Hero, Milwaukee's own, who won it last year, has been starting for the Heat. Former future Milwaukee Buck Jordan Clarkson for the Utah Jazz. has started every game this year. He won it a couple years ago. So Bobby in the hunt for a sixth man of the year here at the, the 10th of a season poll or whatever we're at. No, we're about a tenth of the way through the season, the 10th poll. So the Bucks they're just going to sweep all the awards because the Bucks are only going to lose like 4 to 5 games this year. So Coach Bud will have to win Coach of the Year. It's going to be a clean sweep, guys. That's what I'm going for.
The thing I will appreciate though is Bobby will campaign for it. Like Brooke is not going to say anything. Giannis isn't going to say anything. Drew Holiday is not going to say anything about making a first All-Star team in a decade. You know, if Chris Middleton is able to play enough games to be in the conversation for the All-Star team, he's not going to say anything. Bobby is going to say, I mean, he's already said it. That's a goal. And so I'm just looking forward to that. Strictly for that sort of entertainment part of it. Because Bobby, you know, is going to campaign for it. And, you know, and if he's into it, then the Bucks team as a team might actually get involved, which they don't really like push because that's just not their style. And then, of course, you know, Bucks fans, you know, I'm here for that because that'll be fun.
If we're lucky, George Hill will say something. He's one of the first people that I talked to in the locker room, like when it was Lopez and Giannis up for defensive player of the year. And I think Lopez got like sixth or whatever. George will tell it like it is. That's, you know, another great thing is that we get to see him and talk to him regularly. So, but again, this is JR way too soon.
Never too soon.
Do you still have that petty horn? Do you still have that petty warrant? Can I have access to that or some other version of my own?
We definitely should make that one of these segments. This week in NBA petty, especially if it involves the Milwaukee Bucks. Love the petty horn. Great throwback. Shout out to Matt Velasquez. But yes, so since it is election season, Bobby Portis, future mayor of the city of Milwaukee, wonder how many election cycles we have before he's sitting in the big chair. I suppose a few, because he's young. He's younger than Giannis, so his career has a long way to go. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Point Forward podcast. Thanks to Lori Nickel and Jim Ozarski for joining me this week. Guys, I love it. It's the three-man booth. We never get to do anything like that. That's pretty fun. So we'll have to do this again next week.
The three what?
Oh, I said three-man booth, but that's wrong way to say it. You're right. Three-person, three folk. I'm not sure.
I'm just teasing. I'm just sorry. Do you regret having me? Did you get to talk enough? I'm so sorry.
You've been muted the whole time that we've been talking, so don't you worry. It's all going to get spliced out, and everything will be great. No, I love having you on. It's awesome to have fresh eyes on all this. So Jim is in Atlanta, the Bucks, of course, Monday night. I'm going to post this Monday afternoon. I can't wait till Tuesday. And of course, maybe you're hearing us at 97.3 The Game. You can find us on all the usual podcast places at Apple, App Stitcher, Spotify, whatever it is. And we'll be back next week. They got a Monday game next week too. So we're just gonna post it on Monday afternoon, and you'll still be able to find us Tuesday morning. Thanks for joining us on the Point Forward podcast. We will chat with you again next week. Bye bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.